This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Standardized tests. You probably had some experience with them when you were a student. But unless you only recently left high school, chances are the level of testing you experienced was quite a bit different than what's going on now. So what effect is today's regime of testing having on public education? Are we getting the benefits originally intended? Are there unintended consequences? Are changes or improvements needed? We get help addressing these questions from three people in the hour ahead. A longtime school teacher who now specializes in gifted education at the elementary level. A former public school teacher who now teaches future teachers. Plus, a former public school teacher who's now a state legislator. And if you've got any insight into the state of testing in Virginia schools, you'll be invited to join in too when our conversation begins right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The state of testing in Virginia public schools is our focus. Later in the hour, we expect to meet up with a Virginia House of Delegates member, Dickie Bell, a former high school teacher himself, who was instrumental earlier this year in getting the number of standardized tests reduced in Old Dominion public school systems. But we begin with two current teachers. Smith Coleman has taught in a number of different school systems, both public and private. He is currently part of the Gifted Education Program at Rockingham County Schools. Sitting next to him, a woman who once taught English in the middle schools of Indianapolis City Schools, but who these days helps train future teachers in her role as a professor of education at Eastern Mennonite University, Beth Lehman. Mr. Coleman, Dr. Lehman, thank you both for making time for us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Beth, let me go to you first. You recently published an opinion piece in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and it was titled, Testing, the Kids Are Not All Right. Outline your concerns for us.
Yes. Well, I've been watching trends in schools for a number of years and in different places and localities, and I've been watching what's happening with a high-stakes testing climate in schools. And I've been concerned here in Virginia, wondering, how will change happen? Where is the conversation happening about this? What is the topic around testing that generates broad community concern? And the thing that I wanted to focus on is that I think there's broad community concern about the well-being of children. And that when you really look closely at the experiences children have in schools that are highly driven by a high-stakes testing requirements and generate a high-stakes testing culture, that there are a number of indicators that suggest kids are really not all right with that, that their learning experiences are very limited, that their opportunities to engage in inquiry and exploration and learning through play are limited, that their early sense of themselves as successful learners can be limited by the labels they feel through testing, and also students who are highly successful on tests can be limited by the label they feel as successful because everything after that might be hard and then they're not prepared to face those challenges. It's an interesting dilemma that in particular ways, children who sort of come rather easily to doing well on tests are not really well served by those high scores. And students who do poorly are not particularly well served by the labels that come with those scores. And students that score in the middle are also not particularly well served. So in that opinion piece, I really wanted to really begin to engage in a public conversation about what students are experiencing in school and what we would really most want for them. I would most want for students to have opportunities to be creative and to explore and to collaborate, to work on problem solving. And in a lot of ways, a curriculum that becomes really driven by a high-stakes demand becomes narrower in curricular focus and becomes narrower for students in terms of opportunity. So I really wanted to initially put some attention on the dilemmas of students in that situation. In doing that, I think the conversation inevitably has to become bigger to what are the dilemmas for teachers, what are the dilemmas for students. I currently work in teacher ed, and I think education right now is a very dynamic and exciting field to work in. And I have teacher ed students who will go to practicum placements, and sometimes they'll come back discouraged and say, well, I am really enthusiastic about being a teacher. I feel this is my calling and my passion. And my practicum teacher said to me, oh, this is a lousy time to go into education. I wouldn't be a teacher now if I were you. There, and this raises my concern. I'm concerned for children in schools, and I'm concerned for educators who really come to teaching with a zeal and a passion. And that zeal and passion, and rightfully so, their philosophic assumptions, their beliefs about students as learners, are not driven by the idea that at the end of the year, what matters most is the score on this exam.
I think also that we have to engage the question about this testing environment for schools on a lot of levels. We have high stakes testing, and high stakes testing means that there are sanctions attached to these tests. There are sanctions for the child if they do well or if they don't do well. There are sanctions attached to the teacher. There are sanctions attached to the school. There are sanctions attached to the school system. There are even sanctions for the state, for the Commonwealth. And this is a, you know, people say a sort of a test and punish environment. And that is a pretty heady stuff for a child and for a, and we have to remember the child. This system of standardized testing, which we buy, we are buying this system. We buy this system from a very large testing corporation. Those tests that we buy are very tricky. They're hard. They're good tests. I'm not going to say they're bad tests, but they're almost all multiple choice tests. I want to talk about that for a minute because here's a child who, let's say, sitting in kindergarten class for the first time this week, is going to have a K-12 experience in our public education, and right about now is riding home on the school bus. And this child in that K-12 experience is going to take many, many, many high-stakes tests. And we owe it to this child for her to get the kind of education that doesn't just allow this child us to know exactly what this child knows and can repeat in multiple-choice fashion. What we would like for this child is to be a creative, thoughtful, engaged citizen. We want this child to have wings, and we want her to fly. We want her to be able to take off. We want her to know enough about herself to feel confident. And what we're creating through this testing environment is the belief, I think, that if I can do well on multiple choice tests, if I am a good test taker, then I win. And high stakes testing, standards of learning tests, they're not life. And life isn't a multiple choice test. I think we could do better there. I think we have to engage that idea.
I agree.
Education Professor Beth Lehman, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my impression that we got into the levels of standardized testing that go on in public schools across the nation today, including the standards of learning or SOL testing regime that is in Virginia, because the general public felt they needed more accountability for public schools. They needed, one, a better understanding of whether or not schools were succeeding at teaching kids, and two, a way to encourage more success.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, am I correct that that's part of how we got ourselves into this situation? And secondly, if that is correct, what would be better than what is going on now?
You are correct. And it's an interesting, I mean, it's particularly interesting to me. I think that the stories and the historical trends and shifts in public education are really important and powerful to remember and know right now today. It was in the 1980s that a big national report, A Nation at Risk, came out. And that was the first time that the public somewhat dramatically made a turn in public opinion polls about public education to thinking, whoa, maybe public education is not doing very well. And that report was taken up very heavily by legislators, political leaders, some school leaders, as a call to make dramatic change. in some ways, I think some researchers and theorists would suggest that the way that report was taken up and applied was somewhat a misrepresentation of the concerns that were actually named. But in any case, it really generated a force that began schools in the 1990s toward moving toward a more standardized approach to learning, wanting to have more accountability. And then that came in really very strongly in particular ways that moved much more toward a high-stakes testing culture after the implementation of No Child Left Behind in 2001. The concern from the public and the observation that schools were really wildly failing, I think we should say this, and we should say over and over again, is really widely misrepresented. There would be many reasons to, even at that time, to have seen schools in many ways as not wildly failing the nation, but in fact being strong sources of public opportunity and experience. I personally think we should continue to really celebrate the history of public school in this country. It was not a vision of the founders of the nation that we would have free public school for all citizens. It came later through a series of actions and advocates for students and for equity and for justice. That all students have schools to attend is a really rich and powerful piece of our country.
Dr. Lehman, it seems to me that one of the things that I've heard any number of times from people in your profession is that the fallacy of what had gone on in measuring results in American schools compared to some school systems in other places in the world is that American schools take everyone, where many of those other places had only select parts of their population mm-hmm. who were sort of educationally advantaged to begin with in their school systems. So comparing the U.S. grades and what was being accomplished in U.S. schools to some of those other countries' schools was not a fair comparison? Is that part of what you're talking about?
That is correct. A number of times when international comparisons are made on test scores, it is not taken into account that the student population of schools across nations are not comparable in their what we might call academic preparedness. Their cultural match with the language of school and the language of testing is not comparable. So that's not a fair assessment or comparison between the nations. There's also just sometimes a misreading of data. I think somewhat routinely, NAEP scores, for example.
NAEP, while you think of it for a moment, let me note for anybody listening who's just tuned in that we're hoping to consider both the benefits as well as the detriments from how standardized tests are currently being used in public schools. And if you've got views on either side of this issue or on both sides, 888-WMRA Talk is the easy way to remember our phone number. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825, or if you prefer, you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page here in the Insight studio from the Teacher Education Department at Eastern Mennonite University, Beth Lehman, and from the Elementary School Division of Rockingham County Schools, Teacher of Gifted Education Classes, Smith Coleman. Beth?
NAEP is the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and it's one of the longer consistent tests given, and it's not a high stakes test. It's a test that offers a report on how children are performing in reading and math. And for a couple of decades, the trend shows consistent gains. There's reason to think, oh, look, we are improving in reading and math. The piece about trying to look at trends in educational achievement that gets to be more complicated is when you pull many of them together, you find, the average is overall growth, but there are pockets of student population where we are not satisfied with the results. Some people call that the achievement gap. I would call it an opportunity gap.
We'll have a chance to ask you more about that and Smith Coleman to get you in on this as well. But when we get back, we're going to be talking with a state legislator who also has a reservation about standardized tests. First, this break. Smith Coleman has taught at the middle and high school levels in Albemarle County, Orange County, and the city of Fredericksburg. These days, he teaches in the Gifted Education Program at Rockingham County's Plains and Peakview Elementary Schools. Beth Lehman worked for a time as a middle school teacher in and around Indianapolis, Indiana. She's also been a literacy coach, an instructional coach, and an education consultant. Today, she trains future teachers in her role as a faculty member in the education department at Eastern Mennonite University. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And now, joining us from his office at the state capitol, former Augusta County Schools high school teacher and now Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Dickie Bell. Delegate Bell, so good to have you back on Virginia Insight.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure to be with you.
So what's your view, Dickie, about the state of standardized testing in Virginia's public schools?
Well, you know, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of standardized testing in general, although I do think, and I think most people agree, we have to have some measurement tool to measure progress. We probably also disagree widely on what that should be or how it should be administered. The SOLs, as you know, this year we did some work on SOL reform and eliminated some of the tests. I was in favor of eliminating even more of them. We had one piece of legislation that would have peeled it all the way back to the 17 required tests, and that piece was not successful, but I certainly supported it. I just think we need to, the first thing we do in terms of reform is eliminate some of these tests. I think we have entirely too many SOLs to begin with.
Standards of learning tests for anybody driving through Virginia who knows SOL is something else as it's known in other parts of the country. But in Virginia, yeah. It has to do with education.
Well, I want to join in here a little bit on this. It's such a great question. You mentioned accountability. And I have to say that I've never, ever talked to a teacher that said, you know, I don't feel like I should be held accountable. Now, that's not what educators are saying. What educators, I think, are experiencing, and I think school systems are struggling with, is how are we being held accountable with these tests? I mean, by whose metric? What measure? And what we get out of this large system that produces a lot of these tests, we get a tremendous amount of data. So much data, and we get so much data that it's amazing how much, when we use it, and data is good, data is not a bad thing, but I want to make sure that we understand the difference between data and an educational philosophy. An educational philosophy is very different from the data that's streaming in front of us as educators all the time now. An educational philosophy is something that we understand. It permeates from the top down and from the bottom up, and every child understands. Our philosophy, as I see it now, as it stands with this testing environment, is this, and that is that we're going to produce children, our precious children, who are able to go about taking a test and doing very well on it, and in multiple choice, and reproduce all these, some people say factoids. There's so many facts. They can reproduce this in multiple choice form, it's not real. It's not a real life situation. It's not success. It's not real success.
Have lots of people waiting on the line to join the conversation, and we only have Delegate Bell with us for a few more minutes. So before we follow up with what Smith was saying, let's get to some of these calls. First to Harrisonburg, Michelle, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Hi, Tom. And full disclosure, I actually know Smith. So Smith, it's Michelle. Hi, nice to talk to you.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
Well, Michelle, we'll let you stay on the air anyway. You had a question or comment for all three
of
us, I guess.
I do. My point is, I'm a college professor. I teach English, and I've been teaching for about 15 years. And my colleagues and I have been noticing, probably in the last decade, that the students that we receive in our introductory English classes are horribly underprepared for critical thinking and written analysis. Mm-hmm. And to the point that we have students asking us, what is the, can you give us the study guide for the first test? And it's unfortunate because, you know, many of us think that it's possible that the standardized testing, the focus on preparation for the test, is robbing these students of the ability to think critically, because really what they're used to doing is memorization.
Delegate Bell, can you hear Michelle okay?
I can, yes.
You have any response to what you're hearing from her?
Well, I think the short answer for me is yes. I do think the students are being robbed of those critical thinking skills because they're not given an opportunity to work out problems with real problems, real world problems. They're not given the opportunity to do it cooperative. You know, life is not a multiple choice test. There are other ways to succeed. There are other ways to show progress. There are other ways to develop critical thinking skills besides just having facts poured over you all the time. And I really do believe very much that we have done damage to critical thinking skills and to teaching.
I would add in that I would agree that has happened, and it's a sneaky way that it's happened in public schools. People who endorsed accountability and standards of learning early on had good intentions and wanted to see people striving toward rich and equitable learning opportunities. But whenever we make a change in education, there are results that occur that are what we had planned for and expected. And there are things that happen that are unexpected and sometimes go unnoticed for a while. And one of the things that slips in when a system of standardized testing becomes high stakes so that the test really matters, the curriculum is more and more heavily narrowed toward the purposes of that test. We could think of that narrowing as part of what we would sometimes in education call the hidden curriculum, that schools teach things that are by design and intentional and on purpose, and we also systematically, unintentionally, sometimes unknowingly, embed learning opportunities, learning lessons that students take in that were not part of the plan. It was not part of the plan in generating standards of learning that we would narrow and narrow the learning experience. But it has become part of the hidden lesson, and one way that that's part of the lesson is that what matters most is the product at the end.
Dickie Bell, you can only be with us for a few more minutes, and you did say a little earlier on that we need some measure or some way of making sure that our schools are succeeding or that they're accountable to the public. What's better than these standardized tests?
Well, I have my own thoughts and opinions about that, but let me just say this in a general way. Most of the teachers that I know and have ever met do it because, first of all, they love it, and because they have a certain element of creativity that allows them to communicate and to teach and to impart knowledge to their students. And I think that's being stifled. I think teachers have become standard test robots. I think many of them are frustrated with it. I think given the space and the leeway to do it, that they can teach the children what they need to know based on a curriculum that is teacher-originated. I think that we don't need to come up with a one-size-fits-all standardized test and then try to pigeonhole everyone into it. I've seen that so much over the years in public education. I think it's the wrong approach. I believe that there is a communication that takes place between most teachers, and certainly good teachers, and students that allows them to connect. And I think that there are, without saying this plan or that plan or one is better than the other, I believe in the just the natural progression of things, that we can educate our children without putting the pressure on them to take these standardized tests. And that pressure transfers right back to the teachers, who at some point are going to be evaluated on how the child does on the test. And, you know, things like test anxiety, those things are real. We hear that term, but they're real, and they affect the outcomes on these tests. And I don't think we're getting the outcomes that we would like to have, and I don't think we can really measure how well or how little some of these students are learning. I would trust the teachers to devise the curriculums that educate the children to the extent they need to be.
And I would stress
reading and writing. I believe that a solid foundation in reading and writing allows us to expand learning.
888-WMRA Talk, the easy way to remember our phone number. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. With us by phone, member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Republican from Stanton, and retired high school teacher, Dickie Bell, here in the Insight Studio from the Teacher Education Department at Eastern Mennonite University, Beth Lehman, and from the Elementary School Division of Rockingham County Schools, Teacher of Gifted Education Classes, Smith Coleman. We're going next to Stanton. Bonnie, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, I have two. I'll try to make the very brief comments. The first one is that I'm 53. I grew up in the 60s and 70s in public school, and I went through new math, which did not do just simply rote memorization. And I still have a very difficult time with multiplication tables because I didn't just do rote memorization. I think sometimes that's very important. My second point is that, you know, you've been talking a lot about multiple choice questions. And for me growing up, if I had not had multiple choice questions, my intelligence level, what I knew, may have looked very poor because the way my brain works, I was able to deduce answers instead of having to invent something, which to me in some ways, I know a lot of people who listen and write notes, and when they have those long answer essay things, that's where they spew back what the teachers have taught them. So for me, multiple choice was very, very important because of the way my mind worked.
Right. And I hear that. This idea that we need to teach facts and children need to know things in school, well, we couldn't agree more. Educators know this, and I'm with you. But I'd like to back up just a minute. So you should know your multiplication facts. You should know what the 13th Amendment is and the 16th Amendment is. You should understand the Constitution of the United States. You should know a lot of things. And we're responsible as educators to teach those things. I'm just going to say, though, that the sheer volume of facts that we are to impart to children, the sheer number, is almost mind-boggling. And so what we do is we find the children who are not going to do well on those tests, and we work with them to be able to repeat those things in multiple-choice fashion, right? And when we do that, we're teaching to the test, and we're spending a lot of time and, frankly, a lot of money helping people do well on multiple-choice tests. Now, I know that there are some people like you that do well on multiple-choice tests. I don't happen to do well on multiple-choice tests myself, but I tell you, I understand that. There are different people that do well on different things. But children need to know how to, as Delegate Bell said, children need to know how to read. They need to know how to write. They need to know their math facts, and it's extremely important that you do. And here's what's going on. All the research in education that's going on right now, and there's so much great research going on, is pointing very specifically to the idea that what we want to do is we want to build a situation where children, the overarching idea is that a child, we can tell a child this in a million ways too. The best science hasn't even been imagined yet. The best books have not been written. The most important math has not even been thought of. The history that's critical to who we are has not even been dug up yet. And that's the overarching idea that we need to impart to our children. And what we're imparting to them under this standards system, the standards testing system, is that all they need to know is that everything the teacher knows. And if they can do that in a multiple choice fashion, they're going to succeed. And I'm sorry, but that's fiction. That's not true.
Bonnie, thanks so much for your call. Dickie, before you have to leave us, what do you see happening next in the General Assembly? You've told us that you are an advocate for reducing the number of standardized tests even further. Do you see that happening? Do you see something else happening in terms of the accountability movement in Virginia's public schools?
Well, I do see this movement to reduce test numbers continuing. I think we're going to see some activity on that in the 2015 session. What I hope is that someone's not going to come along with another plan, call it whatever. You know, before the standards of learning, we had the literacy passport, and for the last couple of decades, there's always been something, and we've had to have a name with it. Let's just call it educating the children, and let's just do it. It's not the role of government or of public education to pick winners and losers. You know, public education's job is to teach those children as much as they can, and government's role is to provide the necessary resources for that to take place, and then get out of the way. We don't need to come up with all these new things, these new forms of testing, so that we can attach a name to it or so that someone can take credit for reforming public education. We need to let the people inside, the teachers who have the closest association with the children, they need to be given the freedom to teach. And if they're good teachers, they will do it. The kids will get educated. And I think the less government involvement we have, probably the better.
I would chime in first I'd like to have the opportunity just to say thank you, Delegate Bell, for your work.
Thank you for your work and for your sentiment there. I appreciate your confidence in educators.
Because to the earlier question that you explored, you know, if we didn't have, because this is the question people always ask, well, if we don't have standardized tests, how will we know if schools are performing? And in your tremendous voice of support for the education professionals in your statement is much appreciated. There are already networks of teachers, professional educators who have professional organizations like other professions do. And within those organizations of teachers of mathematics and teachers of English and all the content areas have professional organizations that I think are very well poised to help set the criteria. They have established professional standards of what teaching and learning looks like in each subject area.
Right.
And those standards come from the professionals who are educators in those fields. And I think we really should turn our attention to those organizations for guidance.
I also want to think about this whole idea again, backing up a little bit.
I'm going to have to ask you if you could hold on to that.
You got it.
Because we have to pause for a break in a moment, and Delegate Bell needs to leave us. But Republican member of the Virginia General Assembly from Stanton, Richard Dickie Bell, represents the 20th District in the House of Delegates, that district including Stanton and Waynesboro, the County of Highland, as well as portions of Augusta and Nelson counties. Delegate Bell, as always, great spending time with you. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Tom, thanks for having me on. Dr. Lehman and Smith, thank you very much for letting me join in.
Professor Beth Lehman and public school teacher Smith Coleman are staying with us, and we're going to continue our conversation with them in just a bit more than 1 minute. The op-ed that Beth Lehman wrote concerning the state of standardized testing was titled "Testing the Kids Are Not All Right." It appeared several weeks ago in the Richmond Times-Dispatch newspaper, and you can find a link to it on the Virginia Insight page at WMRA.org. Dr. Lehman is an assistant professor of education at Eastern Mennonite University. Sitting beside her, a man who, after growing up in central Virginia, spent some time in his youth teaching English at the University of Madrid in Spain. He has since taught in several school systems around Virginia and currently serves as a teacher of gifted education programs in Rockingham County Schools, Smith Coleman. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Smith, I cut you short before. Please continue.
I want to think about that question. You know, sort of I do want to back up a little bit and talk about who we are as a nation. And this matters in Virginia, but it's also a national issue right now. This testing issue is a very national issue. But, you know, the United States did not win our independence from the greatest military power on earth. And we did not slug our way through the Civil War. We did not get through World War I and the Great Depression and win freedom for Europe and large portions of Asia, rebuild Europe and portions of Asia, land on the moon, stare down the Soviet Union. We didn't do any of that because of high-stakes standardized testing. It's not who we are. It's not what got us where we are. And it's not really going to take us anywhere that we want to go, in my opinion. And I want to add one thing, and that is that if you go to a good university in Virginia, really anywhere in the United States, you're going to look and you're going to see, if any of these public universities, you're going to see a lot of students who are not from this country. And there's a reason for that, because there's some great things going on in education in this country. There always have been. There have been weaknesses. We're not perfect. But this is a place where you can get a great education, and we want that for all our children. That's not going to happen because we're testing the heck out of them.
Well, that idea that we're testing the heck out of them, too, it sounds kind of funny, but in fact is really important to highlight, because something on the edge of an earlier caller's comments reminded me again that if you're not really deeply engaged in the work of schools right now, it may seem, as you're looking in, that, okay, so big deal, there's a few tests at the end of the year. Right? We've had standardized tests forever. I took them as a kid. You took them as a kid. They mm-hmm. come up. But the thing that's hard to communicate if you're not in the schools feeling the impact of these tests because they are high stakes, it's really fundamentally a climate change to the school community. And I appreciate the recent work in the state of Virginia to reduce the number of tests. The interesting thing that doesn't take into account is the degree to which in any local area, students take far more high-stakes type standardized tests than what's reflected. Virginia requires more than the federal government requires. Individual districts require more than the state requires. And I don't fault anyone for that. I understand why it's happening. Teachers and administrators and districts are really kind of running scared. There's a high culture of compliance, and we must look good on these final exams, high-stakes tests. So we must practice them.
Absolutely.
And it drives much of what's going on.
Next to Orange, if we could, Mike's been hanging on the line for a while. Mike, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Professor of Education Beth Lehman and or gifted education teacher Smith Coleman, please.
Well, thanks, Tom. I'd like to, and studio guests, I'd really enjoyed the conversation so far. And I'd just briefly like to pick up on some words that we used earlier, robot, accountability, history. And if I could just make a succinct 9-point comment.
We're not going to have time for 9 points, but give us a couple of points, Mike.
A few points, moving from a student-centric to a community-centric perspective. First, as many know, standardized testing is an outgrowth of compulsory schooling. And the question of whether we have too much standardized testing can't be answered without asking what kind of society that we really value. I'd also say that the DNA of compulsory schooling runs counter to, because it's compulsory, to our most deeply held values about freedom and liberty.
So, Mike, hold on right there, because I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. Do you think that in our country, no one should be required to go to school for any length of time?
No, it's not that. It's what it's about is understanding that if we want to change schools, and schools are, they are just an outgrowth of our values, and they're an outgrowth of our community. To talk about changing standardized testing is like asking a fish to learn how to breathe. And that our schools today are a reflection of our economy. They're a reflection of our loss of increasing loss right now of local commerce and of the trust that occurs when a buyer and a seller shake a hand, and moving to a global economy.
Okay, Mike, hold on there for me, if you could. It seems to me, Beth Lehman, that Mike in Orange sees what's going on in schools today as connected to a number of societal ills. I don't know how you feel about that, but his comments do remind me that I've heard you say in the past, Dr. Lehman, that you think industry in America is being affected by the kind of training students are getting in public schools these days, where they can't deal with ambiguity as well, mm-hmm. and you don't think that we're encouraging as much original thought or even entrepreneurship?
Mm-hmm. I think those are questions to ask. I think there are a number of sort of phenomenological markers around employers with frustration about young employees in the workplace, the earlier caller about English students in college not, you know, being ready for analysis of complex thinking and literary texts. And I do think there's a reason to look at that and say, well, are we preparing students as we would want for the skills of the 21st century, which are in part technological, but they are not only technological. They are collaborative. They are what we need is people who collaborate globally, who interact and have integrity, who can solve problems, who can live with ambiguity, who can see the multiple sides of an issue and take on trying to find out what makes the most sense there.
Yeah. So a big part of the job of an educator now, a big part is to teach children how to learn,
mm-hmm.
how to go about that as a group, as an individual, you know, as a society. How do we learn? And we have to also teach them that not knowing is okay. That's what happens before you know. And that work where you're engaging children is what businesses need. It's what we need as entrepreneurs in the world, what universities are asking for. You know, my friend Scott Hammond at JMU, he's a political science professor there, he says if a student comes to me with wonder, mm-hmm. you know, just comes to me with wonder, we're going to have a good time. And if a student comes to me and says, what's on the test, I'm going to have a bad time, and so is that student.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mike, thanks so much for your call. We're going next to Charlottesville. Jeremy, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Beth Lehman and or Smith Coleman, please.
Thank you, Dom. I wanted to make a comment as to the economic effect of these tests. The more and more tests, the cost goes up and up. Teacher salaries have either dwindled or gone down. Teaching staff in schools has also gone down. If we were to eliminate these tests, how much more money could we put into our system where it's actually needed teaching our students?
This is the great, it's almost a great unknowable. It's a good question. If you were to do a FOIA request, from the state, a freedom of information sort of thing on how much the state pays for standardized testing and the accoutrements, I really don't think you would come, I know that you wouldn't come away with a straight answer. The state would do their best to answer your question as per the legal parameters of the question. But the fact is that it's an unknowable thing. It is, I believe we're talking about billions. And I believe that the state is the Commonwealth of Virginia could spend that money more effectively. And I just want to say, if we had spent, I hate to look back all the time, but if we had spent a third of the money that we've spent on the standardized testing regimen on early childhood and really helping children who are coming to our schools with deficit, And because of data, we know who they are. We could have made a difference, and we still can. That's the future. That's what we've got to do. We've got to drill down to what's important. What's important is that we know that the greatest predictor of failure in society, in school, and elsewhere is poverty. There's no greater predictor. That's the predictor. If you've got a poor child, that child is not thinking about school. I'm not even sure they should be. You know, and that's where we are really missing the boat. We're spending money, I think, on the wrong things. And it's a lot of money. Great question.
Jeremy, thanks so much for your call. We have this on our Facebook page from Sheba, actually. Sheba posted several comments, but I have time just for this one. She says, what benefit is derived from giving a test, labeling a child's effort as failure, then sending the child on to the next year's test? How did that help the child learn?
It doesn't. It doesn't help the child learn, of course. And I want to say, one of my neighbors, a good friend of mine, tells this story. He was third grade. He was tested in third grade. His parents and I guess teachers believe that he might be a gifted child. He was tested as a gifted child. And he was found ineligible. Didn't make it. And he said to me, you know, I just knew right away as a third grader that I would never be a doctor or engineer or an engineer, the two things that I wanted to be.
Because of how he was labeled.
Because he was labeled. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I just want to say we wield powerful tools as educators, you know. And I know that educators care deeply about the children that we serve and the communities that we work in. We care deeply. And we don't want to wound children. That's not what we want to do. And so I want to speak loudly and clearly about our duty to lift children up in this world. That's our job. And it's a sacred duty. It's extremely important that we do not hurt them.
I think we've got time for one more call. David in Harrisonburg, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question, your comment, please.
Okay, just a couple quick comments. First on standards, the issue of standards, having standards is not necessarily tied to having a barrage of testing and vice versa. There are some real advantages to having national standards, and as far as that goes, the Common Core at least is a step in the correct direction of getting us toward having national standards instead of local ones. But more importantly, on the area of testing, I was reminded of something NPR did a few weeks ago that compared the amount of testing in the United States with three countries, the United Kingdom, Japan, and Finland. The United Kingdom, it turned out, had the closest to the amount of testing that we have here, but it was not pointed out at the time that their achievement levels in mathematics and science are probably closest among those three countries to what we have in the U.S. The country that's, of course, having the greatest success right now of those three is Finland, mm-hmm. which has, in fact, the least amount of testing. And in fact, if one looks kind of up and down the line at all the sorts of things that commonly come out of so-called reform groups in education, many of those things are often the exact opposite of what has been done in Finland to raise the standard of education there.
You make a really excellent point. Finland has been getting a tremendous amount of attention for really high success with students and learning and engagement, and not producing schools that are seem to be caught up and driven by a high stakes testing machine, which I think is a problem here.
Do I understand that some of the things that go on in Finland different than here is children start school at a later age, and they also are allowed much more time to play in school, where we are cutting out many recreational programs in schools these days?
I think that is accurate. It's worth looking at when we build a system that's heavily relies on accountability and testing. What are the assumptions that drive those practices? And one of the assumptions that drives that practice, the reason this sort of seems like it makes good common sense, is that we think, well, if there are tests that matter, people will be more motivated. But that flies in the face of a good bit of more current motivational theory that would indicate those kinds of rewards and punishments that are associated with high-stake tests are motivational and, in fact, finds that they are discouraging. I think we could see that among both teachers and students. In fact, it's less motivating and, I would say, more cynicism, more producing of cynicism than motivation. More producing of fatigue and distrust.
I just like to say I've had high hopes about Common Core for the nation, and I am discouraged at the direction, the current direction. Because your point, I'm just kind of concerned about it. One is that is high stakes testing attached to the Common Core? And if it is, I don't think that's going to help us. I think, as Delegate Bell has kind of talked about, I think we need to look to regions, and we need to give regions a chance. The mountains, the valley, the Piedmont of Virginia, to work on their own a little bit. And I do advocate for children knowing some real basic things. We all do. We're educators, right? We're in that business. We know. We understand that. Not only do we understand it, we're good at it. But the fact is that high stakes testing attached to the Common Core, that scares me.
David, thanks so much for your call. I'm so sorry we are out of time, but do let me mention that our guests have been Beth Lehman, Assistant Professor of Teacher Education at Eastern Mennonite University, Smith Coleman, an elementary school teacher in the Gifted Education Programs at Rockingham County Schools, plus earlier in the hour, Dickie Bell, Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates from Stanton, Virginia. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you for having us. It's an important conversation.
Thanks for having us. It's important and complex.
Yeah.
Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about our guests. Virginia Insight's Executive Director, Matt Bingay, Dan Easley, our Technical Director, Associate Producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon. For more insight.